Manusyanam Sahasreshu Kashchit Yatati Siddhaye Yatatam Api Siddhanam Kashchin Mam Veti Tatvata. We find this word Kashchit in two different forms. Actually, that's Sundi again, making things nice in terms of combining words. But it's the same word, Kashchit. Someone. Some rare person. Out of thousands among men, someone attains perfection. And out of those who are perfected, someone factually knows me. Someone carries the sense of some rare someone. Here the sense is some rare someone, not everyone. And what is it? Out of thousands, one attains perfection. And out of them, someone might know Krishna factually. So it's rare to understand Krishna. Who are those perfected people?
Are they jnanis?
Jnanis, what kind of jnanis?
Transcendentalists,
yes.
Brahmavadis.
But they're, Brahmavadis. And out of them, there may be so many Brahmavadis. Are they all Siddha?
Those who are self-realized Aham Brahmasmi.
The self-realized Brahmavadis. Anyone can be a Brahmavadi, someone who's after Brahma, but someone who's actually attained Brahma, who knows I'm not this body, knows I'm spirit soul, or who knows the impersonal feature of the absolute truth. You can say this is perfection. To know the absolute truth. What does Prabhupada quote here? He quotes it someplace else. Let's see this. No, it's not here. There's another verse, but I'll read it till we reach it. So it's a rare thing. Not everyone understands Krishna. Most people don't even get to the point of inquiring about the absolute truth. Out of them, some may attain the absolute truth. Out of thousands of people who try, and most people aren't even trying, but out of thousands who try, maybe one might actually attain realization of the impersonal Brahma, and out of them, someone might go further and understand Krishna. Even if you've already attained spiritual perfection, it's not so easy to understand Krishna. So, not a common thing. Why? That Krishna can't be known by other methods. By Jnana Yoga, by Ashtanga Yoga, by this, by that. How do you know Krishna? Okay, you're on again.
Bhakti
Amam Abhijanati. By devotional service only. Not by other methods. And not everyone's willing. As Prabhupada explains, he has this nice comment that they say that it's too easy. Have you heard that? Well, bhakti's, that's like yoga light. that's yoga light. That's the lightweight version of yoga. For the heavy duty yogis, there's gyan, and for the lightweight guys, there's bhakti. That's the easy method. But as Prabhupada points out, it's so easy that they can't follow it. The actual process of bhakti yoga requires following the rules and regulations of bhakti, which we would discuss next or nectar of devotion. There's all these rules and regulations, all these standard ways, which are coming from Shruti, from Smriti, from the Puranas, from the Pancharatra Shastras. And anything that's not coming from there, what does it do? Utpat. What's that mean?
Creates disturbance.
Creates a disturbance. It puts you off course, and deviant makes you deviant, and creates troubles in the society of devotees. So the unauthorized bhakti may be very easy, but actual bhakti, it's not so cheap. It's not possible for the Brahman realized impersonalist or Paramatma realized yogi to understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the son of Mother Yashoda or the charioteer of Arjuna. Even the great demigods are sometimes confused about Krishna. Muhyanti yat Suraya. Any questions about this?
A lot of times Prabhupada talks about how bhakti is easy. Could you speak about the two sides?
Yeah, Prabhupada, according to context, sometimes it says it's so easy, and sometimes it says it's not so easy. The impersonal path is really hard. You have to follow regulations there too. It's not even, we could say the same thing about the impersonal path. That is not so easy. The so-called impersonal path, well, yeah, you kind of go with the flow because it's all one, you know what I mean? Well, that's real easy. Anybody can mouth that. But to actually become a bona fide apakka impersonalist is not so easy. You know, first of all, you have to be celibate. Forget it if you're doing anything else. It's not like you and Susie are going to attain Brahman realization. You have to be celibate. You have to seriously follow all these disciplines to realize this extremely difficult object, which has no form, no qualities, no activities, no name, no anything that you can grab onto, which is beyond perception. Described in the 12th chapter, Prabhupada talks about how difficult it is to know that thing. Yes?
Loud, loud. There's an example which is shown that how the Brahman realization is. Prabhupada says
two friends meet each other. Yeah, yeah, sure. We can talk from. We can spend weeks giving all the exquisite put downs that Prabhupada has offered us for the Mayavadi philosophy, targeting the weaknesses of that philosophy. And it's a lot of fun. Their books just the collected arguments of weapons to be used against the Mayavadi philosophy, or shortcomings found in the Mayavadi philosophy. My point is that if you want to practice that path seriously, it's really hard. That makes bhakti look easy. That really makes bhakti look easy compared to what you have to go through to be a Mayavadi. Bhakti is a cinch. Bhakti is a cakewalk, as they say. It's easy. But compared, it's okay, it's harder than just going to the movies, knocking back a couple packs of beer and all of that. It requires self-discipline. It requires seriousness. So not everyone will take to it. Give up what? So it's not as easy as being in Maya. Although, actually, being in Maya is harder, too. Prabhupada mentioned that the neighbors in Los Angeles are complaining, you people don't work, you're just singing and dancing. Prabhupada said, you know, come join us. Okay. Anything else about this?
Can you open up the Brahmavadis and Jnana Brahmavadis?
Brahmavadis and
Brahmavadis
and Gyan Brahmavadis?
Gyan Brahmavadis are
Gyan Brahmavadis and Brahmavadis? I don't know of any such distinctions. The Gyanis and Brahmavadis and Mayavadis are generally the same.
Bhaktas and Brahmavadis are one category who are cultivated. Gyanis, Bhaktas and Brahmavadis.
Gyanis and Brahmavadis are generally the same. They're Gyanis means impersonalist philosophers. So they're generally interested in Brahma, so they're called Brahmavadis. Technically, there are two kinds of Mayavadis, the Brahmavadis and the Shunyavadis, or the impersonalists and the Buddhists. They're practically two versions of the same thing. So they can both be called Gyanis. The zero philosophers and the everything is one philosophers. There are two kinds of Gyanis. Anything else? True love. I've heard that floating around, but I've never seen it in authoritative sources, that the Brahma body is somehow different from a Maya body. Someone would have to bring me a reference, which I don't think anyone has so far. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada says that the Maya bodies are of two species, the Brahma bodies and the Shunya bodies. I'm not sure about that other one. I've seen it floating around, but I don't know that I've seen it in any authoritative source. Certainly it's not a distinction Prabhupada made often, if he made it at all. Yes?
Yeah, Prabhupada says that people like the four Kumaras, Gaudiya Thakur, and Sukadeva Goswami, they're Brahmavadis. But then they heard about Krishna and they became Bhaktis.
Yeah, but they're also, more or less, they were Mayavadis. The Sukadeva Goswami and so on were Brahmavadis. Means that they were Mayavadis, essentially. They were thinking everything is Maya, but then they got to the point and understood, no, there's Krishna.
So Mayavadis, with that distinction, is more pejorative.
Yeah, Mayavadi is usually a...
envious.
Yeah, it's a put-down. Brahmavadi, you might... Well, they're after the absolute truth. Mayavadi means they think everything's Maya. So it's usually a critical term. It's not a nice, flattering term, Mayavadi. So that's why we like to use it a lot. Okay. All right, we're moving on. Now, Krishna has promised to talk about matter and spirit, or phenomenon and noumenon, and now he's going to do it. First, he's going to tell us about matter in one succinct verse, Bhumirapponalo vayu kammano buddhirevacha. Ahankar tiyam me vinna prakritir ashtata. These are the eight material energies, starting from gross and working their way up. Bhumi, earth, is the most gross, and ahankar is the most subtle. They're divided into gross and subtle material energies. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether are gross. Mind, intelligence, and false ego are subtle. We get a gross body and a subtle body. And the ahankar is the most subtle. Prabhupada sometimes refers to it as just the meeting place of matter and spirit. When the spirit soul identifies himself with matter, that's ahankar. A very subtle thing. Almost, you could say, not matter, not spirit, but just the meeting place. But that's matter. As soon as spirit identifies with matter, at once we're on the material platform. Any question about that? Okay. Aparayam itas tvanyam, aparayam itas tvanyam, prakritim vidhime param, jiva bhutam mahabaho. Yayeram dharyate jagat. Energy we just heard about, material energy, is called apara, not superior. Para means superior, and apara means not superior. Not superior means?
Inferior.
So that was the inferior energy, but now, but, there's another, anya. Prakriti vidhi me param. It's also prakriti, it's also my energy, but it's my superior energy. jiva bhutam, consisting of all the living beings. Yayedam, by whom this, idam means the material world, jagat, the material world, is dharyate, used or exploited. The living entities are busy exploiting the material world. It can also be said sustaining the material world. The material world is held up. Dhara, just like Haladhara, one who's holding the plow. Really Dhara, one who's holding the flute. So Dharyate, they're sustaining this world. The world is existing. It's going on because of the presence of the living entities. The whole thing is for the business of the living entity. You want to exploit something? Okay, here, take it. Prabhupada gives the example that a child is crying, I want the moon, I want the moon. And the mother gives the child a little mirror, and the child is happy, I got the moon, I got the moon. So he separates off this material energy and says, okay, kids, go play. Go play with matches, etc. Go play and see what you can do. Exploit the material energy as much as you like, and see how it works. Any question, comment? Yes.
So, Maharaj, a question for the earlier verse.
Earlier verse.
Yes, Maharaj. It says that I was reading somewhere where it says that from sky the air appears, and from air, fire, and so on and so forth. Each one.
You'll find this in the third canto, how the grosser elements evolve from the subtler elements. Lord Kapildev in the third canto describes this, and it's described elsewhere, in the second canto, third canto, in several places it's described how from the subtlest point, from ahankar, in other words, it all expands from ahankar. It starts with false ego, and then it expands from that, one element after another with their different qualities. Because the grosser elements all have one quality less than the one before it. Subtle elements, too. Each element has something less than the one before it. So you add something, you get the next element. You add something, you get the next element. You add something, you get the next element. And in the, I believe it's the 11th or 12th canto, you find that you dissolve it the opposite way. Subtract this, you have one less element. Subtract that, you have one less element. Subtract everything, it's all over. So that's how dissolution takes place. It's also how liberation takes place. You read that Yudhisthira amalgamated this into that, and there's nothing left except pure spirit soul. Yes?
Maharaj, I've got analysis of it. I can send
tomorrow. You've got...
I've done the analysis of it.
Analysis of that, yeah. So you can consult with him. Your name again, remind me? Remind me your name again. Raghav Goswami. So you can consult with him. He's got it. Yes.
Maharaj, there's another mention of there are 24 elements of the material world which are derived from the 8.
Yeah, this is Sankhya philosophy. If you want to get into the 24 elements of the material world, read third canto, Lord Kapiladev's teachings, where it's all elaborated. What are those 24 elements? We'll come across them again in the 13th chapter. These 24 elements. We'll come across them several times. We could enumerate them, but you want to enumerate them? Yes?
Vishuddha Sattva Prabhu is here now. PhD mathematician working on the new temple design. He's going to give a seminar for Bhakti Bhai Bhav on creation and Vedic cosmos, and that'll be, scheduled sometime between now and the end of the course, and Bhakti Shastri students were also invited to that. So he also mentioned he'll cover the Sankhya system and the elements, and he'll look at that.
So we're gonna get that. It's it is important. It is something you want to know. And I would cover it today, except that we're doing a chapter in 2 days, and if we start getting into Sankhya philosophy, it'll be a chapter in 4 days.
Yeah.
And then they take away my toys or something. I don't know. Okay. Yes, one more thing.
Good. Maharaj, we hear that when the soul leaves the body, it goes with the subtle body to the spiritual world.
No.
So the where is
no.
the subtle body?
No. Subtle body doesn't go to the spiritual world. They don't have any subtle bodies up there. No subtle bodies allowed. No gross bodies, no self, subtle bodies, and no cell phones. Subtle body you take with you when you go to your next gross body. That's why sometimes you remember something from your previous life or what have you. Your subtle body is still there from the previous life. That's why you still have desires from your previous life. You know, you wake up and, you know, you want to do this and you want to do that. Like when you wake up in the morning, you wake up and you remember, I wanted to do this, I wanted to do that, because you still have the same mind. So the mind persists along with the living entity as a subtle body. So you keep that subtle body with you. In fact, it's attachment to that. It's that subtle body that keeps you hanging on in the material world. It's that ahankara, that false ego, and everything that expands from it. So you keep that with you. That's described in the 15th chapter. And Krishna says that as the... as the air is carrying aromas, that the subtle body is carrying these desires along with it, and those desires become the source of the next gross body. Like Prabhupada came from India to America with some desires, and those desires became manifest in the form of a society and temples, and so it was all subtle. There was some subtle desire. I want to have a movement. I want to have temples, I want to have deities, all of those things. And from the subtle, the gross, you can say, or the manifest expression took place. If he hadn't come with a desire, nothing would have happened. So it's on the basis of that desire. Or sometimes other people come from India and they have another set of desires. You know, they desire an American wife and a green card and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And they come to America, you know, as pujaris or something. And then they, because that subtle intention was there in the mind, it manifests. They come to America and they make friends with a brahmacharini and, you know, all that stuff. The rest is history. So the thing is manifest, or just from that subtle desire then, the next thing is he's got a wife, and then he's got children, and he's got a home, and he's got all of that stuff. Griha kshetra sutta apta. Why? Janasya moho yamaham maminti. Of course, that causes bewilderment, but it comes from that thinking. So from the subtle, the gross comes. Yes?
Maharaj, in the purport, fifth verse, it is written... The cosmic manifestation has no power to act unless it is moved by the superior energy, the living entity.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it is also written that the forgetfulness of living entity, this forgetfulness is due to the influence of matter upon the living entity.
Mm.
So the matter is influencing the living entity.
Mm.
And here it is written that actually... it is moved by the superior
energy. Yeah, it works both ways. It's like it doesn't do anything on its own. Like this table is matter, but it didn't pick itself up and walk here. It needs a living entity to move it over here, because matter doesn't have individual initiative. But it has qualities. We call them three qualities: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And when you associate with matter, you pick up those qualities. Essentially, matter is dead or inert. When you associate with matter, you pick up these qualities that matter has. Matter has these qualities of dullness. Matter has the quality of passion also. But passion on its own doesn't do anything when it comes in touch with a living entity. In fact, it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the third canto. These modes were sitting there not doing anything. And then the Lord glances over them and activates them. So it's Krishna's power behind the modes that's activating them, but they don't have the power to get up and walk, or they don't have consciousness, but they do have qualities that influence the living entity who comes in touch with them. Is that okay?
When you said that Krishna is actually behind that, but in the previous verse, Krishna is also saying that this is Bhinna Prakriti Ashtam.
Yeah, Bhinna means separated. But behind this separated energy, still Krishna is there in the background. Separated, it's tossed out of Vaikuntha, it's not kept there, or not tossed out because it's never there, but it's separated. It's out here. External energy is sometimes what Prabhupada calls it, Bahiranga Shakti. And it works, what is that? Vividaiva Shuryate? Parasya Shakti Vividaiva. It works svabhaviki. Practically, automatically, it's working. Prabhupada gave the example sometimes of a tape recorder. I speak and then my voice is recorded, and then later the tape recording is going on separately. So it's my energy, but now it's separated. Or another time, Prabhupada gave the example of milk as being the separated energy of the cow. Okay? Yes?
Maharaj, can you explain that? Is there any link in between the...
Love.
Maharaj, can you explain, is there any link in between the false ego and consciousness?
Is there any link between the false ego and consciousness? Well, false ego is about as settled as you go. The sages don't point out still another level, something more subtle between false ego and consciousness. When consciousness identifies with matter, that's false ego. And that's subtle enough. Okay? You don't need anything more subtle, do you? Okay. Anything else?
Mara?
Yes.
So, in the first edition it was sustain, now it's exploit, but they're both sound valid.
They're both valid.
But Prabhupada used the word exploit.
He used exploit. And whoever else we borrowed from said sustain. But Prabhupada said exploit. But they're both true. Tariyata. Etad yonini bhutani sarvani tupataria. Aham Krishnasya Jagata Prabhava Pralayastata. The first sentence of this, by the way, was missing from the first edition. All created beings have their source in these two natures. But that's important. Krishna is saying, this is it. This is what you've got in the material world. You've got matter, you've got spirit, vas. Etad yonini bhutani. Everything comes from these two natures. Sarvaniti. Everything created, upatarya, you should know that. And aham krishnasya jagata prabhava pralayastata. I'm the source of this material world, and I'm the source of its creation and the source of its dissolution. And especially in the form of the Purusha avatars, he's doing all this stuff. Any questions? Okay. Matta parataram nanyat kinchid asti tananjaya. Mai sarvamidam protam sutre maniganaiva. This is very important. Matta parataram. Parataram means? Paratara? Higher, yeah. And mata means than me. And asti means? There is. What is there that's superior to Krishna? Nothing else. Na anyat. Mata parataram na anyat kinchit. There's that kinchit word again. Something, some little thing. Anyat kinchi, nine. Nothing else. Not the slightest thing. Nothing superior to Krishna. No, Krishna is a manifestation of the impersonal Brahma. No, Krishna is a manifestation of something of no. Mata parataram na anyat. There's nothing superior to me. Mayi sarvamidam protam sutre manidana iva. He's giving an example. that as pearls are resting on a thread, everything is resting on me. Very nice example, poetic example. That as pearls are resting on a thread, you don't get a necklace. Oh, this just, okay. You don't get a necklace unless there's a thread. So you may not see the thread, but without the thread, no necklace. So Krishna is the nivasa, he's the source, he's the resting place of everything. Everything depends on him, everything comes from him, everything is under his control, and nothing is above him. Even nothing is equal to him, we'll find that later. Asamordva. Nothing is, that's the definition of the absolute truth. Nothing is equal and nothing is greater. Here Krishna explicitly says, higher than me? Nothing. Any questions? Any?
Maharaj,
yes?
Here it is written that beyond Brahma there is transcendence which has no material form.
Beyond Brahma there's transcendence which has no material form? Where are you looking?
In the first paragraph, the fourth line from below.
Beyond Brahma, Brahma the creator of the universe, there's transcendence. Yes, who has no material form and is free from all material contaminations. Yes. Tato yad uttarataram tad arupam anamayam yaetad vidur amritaste bhavanti atetare dukkam evapiyam ti. Yes, Brahma is the chief person, but beyond him there's that person who has no material form, no material anything. Yeah, what's the question?
So it is for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we understand. But then there is a universal form of Krishna, which is a material form also.
Yeah. He's not the subject of this verse, but what about him?
So there is a material form also.
Yeah, there's a material form, universal form. What do you want to make of it?
Prabhupada writes in the purport that he does not have any material form.
Yeah, therefore it's said in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the Vishwarupa is more or less imaginary. The universal form is more or less imaginary because Krishna has no universal form. No material form. But you can imagine the universe in terms of being Krishna's form. Or Krishna can put on a light show. He can put on a display. You want to see everything in one place? I'll show you everything in one place. Right in my own form. But his form is actually transcendental.
But if you want to see something, I'll...
What is with this today? If you want to see something, I'll show you.
Is it running out of power? Is that what's going on? It's the usual story, the
India wire. It's a particular kind of wire that you find. Maybe it's the ISKCON wire. You find it all over ISKCON. Right? Except Germany.
It's India. Everything is available, but nothing works.
Yeah, everything's available and nothing works. Yeah, I could tell you a story, but anyway.
Write a book.
Yeah, you could write a book, yes. So the universal form is more or less an imagination. Krishna's not walking around with stars in his eye sockets, or moons and stars, moon and sun in his eye sockets. But if you want to see something, or you want to think about this material world, because there are people who think that the material world is God, right? These Gaia people, these Earth people, who even the scientists who imagine that nature is God, or that nature is conscious, nature is. Has intelligence. Nature is alive. Huh? That's quite a popular thing these days. Nature is not just the dead matter that we thought was here for us to exploit. Nature has its own life. Nature has its own intelligence. Nature is supreme. Okay, for people who've reached that stage but haven't gone beyond it, Krishna says, okay, think of nature as supreme, but think of it in terms, think of it like this. And then he gives the universal form as a way to think of nature that will gradually lead you to the spiritual platform and to him. And in fact, he's going to be doing that in the next few verses. Shall we move on to those next few verses? Shall we, shall we? Rasoham apsukanteya prapasmi shasi suryaya. Pranava sarva vedeshu shabdake parusham nishu. Here Krishna identifies himself with material nature in certain particular aspects. Essentially what he says is that now the taste in the water is God. Since I'm God, and the taste in the water is God, so that taste in the water is me. I'm there as the taste of water. A taste in water is a material thing. But it's a very, what is it? It's pure. What qualities does the taste of water have?
Satisfying.
Cooling. Thirst quenching. It's pure.
Filling,
you could say. The taste especially is very nice. I remember in Melbourne they used to have this great water. Now it's like every other water, but some years ago it was, right? It was so great. You'd get an appetite just by drinking this water. It was so good. You drink a glass and you say, you know, wow, I'd like another one of those. It's not like this Bisleri water and all of that. It was fantastic water. And you know, what is it that makes the water so fantastic? Well, that's water. You know, this other stuff we get is something else again. Sort of, that's water-like. Real water is fantastic stuff. But whether you take that water, this water, there's a taste in the water that's unique. So Krishna says, meditate on that, and you'll begin to understand something about me. Or Prabhupada, one time he's translated this, the taste in the liquid. He said, I can make even the drunkard Krishna conscious. Now you meditate that your liquor, the taste of your liquor is Krishna. So appreciating the presence of Krishna, even in this material thing. Rasoham. And prapasmi sasi suryaya. There's light of the sun right now. In the evening there's light of the moon. So that prapa, that shining light, that's me also. That's me also. I'm there as the sun light. I'm there as the moonlight. And pranava sarva vedeshu. In all of the Vedas, this syllable om is there. That's me too. The Mayavadis have tried to make other syllables more important, but the really important syllable in all the Vedic mantras is om. And Krishna says, that represents me. I'm there as om. And shabdake, in apart from om, there's sound everywhere. That sound is me. The very essence of sound. And parusham nishu, the capability, the power. What is Prabhupada said? The ability in man. That's also me. You know, what is that capability? It's something mystical, practically. Someone's able to do something. That's coming from Krishna. Any comments or questions about this? Yes.
And the scientists, they may argue that actually the taste in the water is that the minerals that are contained in the water, and the water itself doesn't have any taste.
Okay. But the water with minerals, that's how it comes supplied. The only way you get water without minerals is if you put a scientist on it.
Strip out the minerals and... Then you get that. But the natural water, the way Krishna supplies it, has taste. Something else? Okay.
Punyo gandha prativyam cha tejas chasmi vipavaso jivanam sarvabhuteshu tapas chasmi tapasvishu. There's an original fragrance which the earth has. If you go out someplace where there's no buildings and no concrete, and, you know, the earth itself is so, has a nice fragrance.
original fragrance, those who are
natural, who were into natural living, there's a natural fragrance to the earth. Priti Vyam means of the earth. And Tejas Chasmi Vipavaso, fire also has Teja, it has heat, it has the power of fire. Krishna says, that's me also. Without fire, you can't cook. Without fire, you can't digest. Without fire, you can't do anything. So that fire is Krishna.
Without fire... It's really annoying, you know? I have this crappy stuff here. It's on again, it's off again. The hell with it. Just turn it off, save the batteries, and the hell with it. Get it out of here. Yeah, give them hell. That's cool. In Ayurveda, the position of Agni is very important. The fire of digestion. You have Mandagni, slow fire, you know, debilitated fire, then your digestion goes to hell and you can't eat, you have no appetite, you have no digestion. So you have to take something that will stimulate Agni. So fire is very important. And Jivanam Sarvabhuteshu, the life of all living beings. Of whatever, in all beings, the very living force is Krishna. Which doesn't mean that the living being is identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead any more than any of these other things. But it means that by meditating on yourself also you can understand. Meditate on your own living force and you'll understand something about Krishna. And tapas chasmi tapasvishu, the power of tapasya in the tapasvis. That's also Krishna. Bijam mam sarvabhutanam vidhi partha sanatanam, the eternal seed of everything. And buddhir buddhimatam, the intelligence that the intelligent have, that's also Krishna. And tejas tejas vinam, the power of the powerful. Balam balavatam chaham kama raga vivarjitam. I'm the power, the strength of the strong, but not just any strength, but kama raga vivarjitam, without attachment, without lust. Dharma aviruddha bhuteshu kamosmi. And I'm sex life that is not contrary to dharma. Sex life that's not contrary to dharma. Which means sex for having good children. Yes? No, that's not a question. Any questions or comments here so far? Ye chayava sattvika bhava rajasas tamasas cha ye mata eva iti tanvidhi naham natvaham teshute mayi. Everything, whether it's in goodness, passion, or ignorance, is within Krishna. But Krishna is not under the modes of material nature. He's not affected. They're in me, but I'm not in them. Any question? Yes.
I just have a question. Then when Krishna refers that he's the living force, and in the, does he referring to prana, or what is he referring
to? Jiva means... Jiva means the actual living being, the actual life. Jiva means life. Jivati, to live. The jiv, the root, means to be alive. Actually, prana is not exactly the living force. It's the life air. It's something not exactly right on the target of the living being himself. But jiva, the jiva, jivatma, is the living entity. Anything else? Okay.
tribhir gunamayar pavayar ebi sarvam idam jagat mohitam na bijanati mam ebya paramabhinam. Very nice. Krishna says that everyone is mohita, bewildered. How are they bewildered? Who's bewildered? Sarvam idam jagat. The whole world. The whole world is bewildered by these modes of nature. Tribhir gunamayara pavaya. Being bewildered by passion, ignorance, and goodness. Na abhijanati imam. They don't know me. People don't know Krishna because they're bewildered by maya in terms of these three modes. He is paramabhyayam. Ebhya paramabhya. He's above these modes. He's transcendental. Something like you can't see the sky when the clouds are hanging low. So when you're under the modes of material nature, you can't see Krishna. He's there, but he's transcendental and can't be seen while we're covered by mayas, by goodness, by passion, by ignorance, especially by goodness, also by passion, and even by ignorance. Yes?
About maya, material mode means maya, because material mode is dull matter. Maya, she's entity. So
Maya's?
She's entity, no?
What kind of entity?
She's living. Is she dull matter or what?
Yeah, okay. Maya generally means matter. But there's a personality of Maya, who's the controller of Maya, or who's, yes. Because Krishna is personal, so his energies have personal manifestations. Something like a prison. Prison's not really a place of life, but it has a controller who's got a life. So the material energy has a personified manifestation. Maya Devi. Maya Devi is personal. But the manifestation of Maya Devi is matter. Whereas the manifestation of the internal potency is spiritual. Is that okay? Something else, yes.
From this sloka and related to Vaigunya Vishaya Vedam is Vaigunya Bhavatina.
You have to speak double loud.
Vaigunya Vishaya Vedam is Vaigunya Bhavatina. Look like the whole Bhagavad Gita is related to three modes of material nature.
Yeah, Krishna's, because we're related to the three modes of material nature.
Where is the transcendental knowledge?
Huh?
How to discriminate, Krishna actually go beyond the three modes of material nature, but Bhagavad Gita is totally on the...
Why totally? If you're stuck somewhere, you want to know where you are, here's the room, here's the door, here's the outside. Got to know that you're in the room, otherwise you'll be confused. Got to know where the door is or you can't get out. And you got to know that there's an outside, otherwise you might as well stay inside. So Krishna's dealing with both. He's dealing with the modes of nature, and he's dealing with what's beyond the modes of nature. Vyakto vyaktat sanatana. Parastasmat tu bhavanya. But he's dealing with the modes of nature because we have to deal with the modes of nature. Honey, you're in it. He's got to tell it to us. You got to hear about these modes of nature because you're in them. Just like the doctor. What's he tell you about? He tells you about fever. He tells you about infections. He tells you about germs. Why? Because you got them.
He tells about the recovery also.
He tells you about recovery also. But there's no meaning to recovery unless you know you're sick. The first thing the doctor has to persuade you is, you got a problem. We just did this test and you have a problem. This isn't working, that's not working.
First thing you need to know is what there's a problem. Next thing is, well, what kind of problem? Well, this, 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 this. What's the cause of the problem? Well, this, this, this. Well, what am I going to do? Well, do this, and you'll be okay. All right, I'll do it. But you're not going to do it unless you're convinced that you have a problem. Right? The first thing is, you have a problem. So that's, and Krishna has to spend a lot of energy on that, because we don't believe it. Who, me? Problem? I don't have a problem.
Siddhohan
Balavan Sukhi. I'm perfect, powerful, and happy. So Krishna is starting from where we are and lifting us up. Shall we do, yes?
I want to ask Maharaj, is there any statement that is made by Krishna which is specifically made for this planet? Right? Or is it like whenever he's talking, he's referring to the whole universal general universe? Whenever he's talking.
What's it to you? You're stuck here. Whether he's talking about the earth or the whole universe. Sometimes he's talking about the earth. Shine punye martyalokam vishanti. You can go to the demigod planets, but you have to come back down. Abrahma bhuvana loka punarab. So sometimes he talks about this earth as distinct from other planets, and sometimes he talks about the whole world. We're going to handle one more verse, 14. Wrap up. Daivi esha gunamayi. Mama maya duratya. Mame viye prapadyante maya me tam. Krishna says, this gunamayi maya, threefold maya, is daivi. It's divine. Why is it divine?
Because Krishna.
Because Krishna's behind it.
Yeah, Krishna's behind it. It's controlled by divinity. So it's divine, daivi, controlled by the deva, the personality of Godhead. Mama maya, it's my energy. And therefore, duratyaya. Real hard to get free from. It's also called Durga. Durga means... Literally, huh?
Fortress.
Yeah,
fortress.
Literally.
Difficult.
Durga.
Difficult.
Durga.
Difficult.
Huh?
Difficult. Durga.
Going. Yeah, tough going, actually, is what it means. Durga. Difficult to go from. Ga means going. Gamayati. Ga. Durga. Tough going. Hard to get out of. So, duratya. Hard to surpass. Hard to overcome. Three modes, like ropes. Guna, another meaning is rope. When you see those sailor's ropes, nautical ropes, three heavy ropes tied together, you don't get tied up with one of those, you're tied. A threefold cord is not easily broken. Ecclesiastes. So, but, ma meva ye prapadyante, those who surrender to me, maya me tam tarantita. This is how you get out. You surrender to Krishna, you're free. You can struggle with the three modes of nature. You can go through so much trouble by mental speculation and neti neti and this, that, and tapasya and so many. But if you just surrender to Krishna, that's it. You can jump over maya. That's the simple thing. Just surrender to me and I'll call off maya. I'll free you from the influence of maya. Any questions? Any questions? Yes?
It says here, Maharaj, that the material energy, as well as the illusion of the living entities, is eternal.
What are we looking at here? Oh, the connection between, yes, the connection between the living entity. Well, Prabhupada, let's look at this briefly, the great question. The material nature and spiritual nature, being emanations from the personality of Godhead, are eternal. Living beings are always there, maya is always there. The living entities belong to the eternal superior nature.
But due to contamination by the inferior nature, their illusion is also eternal. Then Prabhupada says, the conditioned soul is therefore called Nityabhadha, eternally conditioned. Then he explains, no one can trace out the history of becoming conditioned at a certain date. No one can trace out the history of his becoming conditioned at a certain date in material history. So you can't figure out. It's called Anadi Bahir Mukti. He's been turning away from Krishna since time immemorial. That's Prabhupada's usual phrase. Time immemorial means you'll never figure out since when.
You don't know the history, but when you become a devotee of the Lord, and then the Lord says you can surpass the three modes of material nature only when you surrender unto me.
Yes.
So it's not eternal, you know, the definition of eternal.
Yeah, it's there, but you don't have to be connected with it. Illusion will still be there for the rest of the poor suckers, but you don't have to be stuck with it.
But also, like in verse 4, it says, discuss about the Mahatattva, like the manifestation of creation, but at the time of annihilation also the material nature
is withdrawn. It's still there, but it's withdrawn. Just like these road shows, you know, they show you the whole circus with Ferris wheels and tents and exhibits, and they pack it all into a truck, and you don't see it anymore. It's still there. They go to the next place and show it again. They'll come next year and show it again. Yes.
Maharaj, then when we say of Lord Brahma creating the whole material universe, what is that?
It means he's the engineer. Krishna gives him the stuff, Krishna gives him the blueprint, and Krishna says, make me a universe.
Is it not already there then?
Sure. The building's already there, all you have to do is build it.
How are they there?
Huh?
Then how are they there?
How or what?
If the buildings have to be made, then they are not there.
That's not there. Therefore, you called it an engine. It's there, but you need an engineer to put it together, and then it's there. You go out and you buy one of those prefabricated anythings. So you already have whatever the anything is, but you have to put it together. Somebody has to say, okay, what are these instructions? How do I do it? Then you put it together and then you've got it. Whether it's a model car, a model airplane, or whatever it is. They give you the ingredients, or a recipe. You know, this little package, there's a cake. But the ingredients are there, the instructions are there, and somebody has to come and put it together, and then there's a cake. So the universe is there. Why? The ingredients are there and the blueprint's there. Krishna provides the ingredients, then he himself provides the engineer, and then he instructs the engineer, here's what you do. Then you get a universe. Therefore it's called Sarga and Visarga. Primary creation by the Lord, then secondary creation by Brahma.
So Maharaj, can one explain this eternal condition as a cycle of living entities coming in here, going back, coming and going like that? Like, not like necessarily one living entity, but like, there'll always be living entities.
Yeah, that's called bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. They come out, they come back. They come out, they come back. That means during the creation, the day of Brahma, Lord Vishnu exhales, or lifetime of Brahma, Lord Vishnu exhales and everybody's comes out and does their nonsense. Then at the end of Brahma's life, he inhales and they're all withdrawn again. Then he exhales, they come out again. Inhales, they're in again. But that doesn't mean that when they're in, they're liberated. Some like convicts in a jail. There's some time they're allowed to go out in the courtyard. Then the time's up, back in your cell. Of course, that's a little different because they're liberated when they're out in the courtyard. But when they're out in Mahavishnu's body, they're not doing anything. They're asleep is the better example. You're sleeping at night, nothing's happening. Then you wake up, you do all sorts of stuff. So they're sleeping, essentially, in the body of the Lord, and then they come out again. Anything else?
Going back to we're thinking nothing major, but just one statement that only the pure devotees can know something of the inconceivable transcendental qualities. So that's something. So when we talk about in practical application, okay, we surrender to Krishna, and as opposed to an atheist who would say, what would you know about Krishna? You know, as in, if you're reading out the purport to someone and it says, the pure devotees would know something. It's not holistic.
Well, because Krishna doesn't even know himself fully. Something. I mean, how much do you want to know? The atheists know nothing. The devotee knows something. He has positive knowledge. But he knows that he can't know everything about Krishna because Krishna is unlimited. Brahma says, if I could take the earth, and the whole universe, grind it to powder, and count the specks, then I might be able to know something about your qualities. So under the circumstances, to know something is quite a lot. Even to know something about Krishna, that means to know the unlimited to some extent. That's like unlimited knowledge already. But the unlimited is still more unlimited. That's Krishna. Yeah.
Nectar devotion, Prabhupada says there's an eternal competition between Krishna's potencies and his apprehension of his potencies. As soon as he understands himself, he increases.
He increases. So even Krishna can't understand himself. Go understand that. Okay, shall we? Yes.
There is one question. It's a philosophical question. It says that, can God create a stone which he cannot lift?
Wow, that's a deep question.
What was the question?
Can God create a stone that he can't lift? Yes.
It's related to this. That
and then he can lift it. Is that okay?
Yeah. Where are we actually coming from? Are we falling from the
Vaikuntha? Oh, we almost escaped this class without that question. All together now. Boo!
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 Yes, the question. Off topic.
All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
They really said they were going to start at 11:30. 11:45 they said.